You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
What are the challenges of New Testament archaeology? Well, the third annual These Stones Will Shout Biblical Archaeology Lecture is set for September 29th at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Stick around to learn more.
Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University St. Paul. You can learn more about Concordia University St. Paul at csp.edu.
Someone who can say archaeology lecture better than me, the Reverend Dr. Stephen Peach, Professor of Practical Theology and Dean of Theological Research and Publication at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Peach, welcome back to the Coffee Hour.
Thank you. Good to be here. I'm interested in hearing Dr. Notley's story and more details about El Arash.
Joining us today, Dr. Stephen Notley. He is Dean of Religious Studies at Pillar College and the lecturer for the upcoming lecture on biblical archaeology. Dr. Notley, welcome to the Coffee Hour.
Thank you for having me here.
Let's talk a little bit about your work and your background. When did your interest in biblical archaeology begin?
Well, actually, my training is in history and literature. I went over in 1983 and did my doctorate at Hebrew University in comparative religions, looking at ancient Judaism and Christian origins, sort of the religious context, the literature of the period, Dead Sea Scrolls, intertestamental literature, early rabbinic literature, and how they shape our reading of the Gospels, particularly. And then I stayed on and taught for a number of years in Jerusalem. And one of the things that you engage is that you, when you teach history there, you have to engage the physical settings, the stage onto which these events unfold. And that drew me into historical geography, which is a multidisciplinary approach that involves archaeology, looking carefully at history, geography, sometimes toponymy, the study of place names. And eventually I found myself drawn into some aspects of archaeology in connection with our excavations at El Arash. And so I've been involved there, really intently involved in archaeology the last 10 years, since 2016.
So tell us about El Arash. What is El Arash? Where is it? What is its significance in history?
Okay, El Arash is, if you want to think of if you look at a map of the Sea of Galilee, if you think of the Sea of Galilee as a clock, we're 1 o'clock on the lake. So we're on the northeast corner of the lake, just beyond the Jordan. We're outside of Galilee. In Jesus's day, the Jordan was the separation between Galilee and the Golan, the lower Golan. And El Arash sits on the lake shore. The name El Arash is an Arabic name that developed much later. We contend that it's the site of Bethsaida Julius, the Jewish fishing village of Bethsaida, which is the name we know from the Gospels. Herod Philip, the son of Herod the Great, is according to Josephus, he transformed it into a small city, a polis, and renamed it Julius after the queen mother, the mother of Tiberius, the widow of Caesar Augustus. And so we always refer to as Bethsaida Julius. And there's been a question about its location for the last 150 years. There's been an ongoing discussion, debate regarding where it was situated.
So what then does this mean as we learn this? What have you learned from this excavation and others? What does this mean not only for historical significance, but also then when we talk about biblical significance as well?
First of all, I like to call it, it's a little bit Hollywood-esque, but I like to refer to it as the last lost city of the Gospels. And our site is, most people don't realize, if you go to the Holy Land and you go to all of these places and Caesarea, Megiddo, Capernaum, you have your picture taken in front of it, people assume that it's always been known where those were, and that's not true. In time, almost all of our biblical sites, except for ones that had continuing settlement in Jerusalem, Bethlehem, but most of the sites that we read about, locations we read about, disappeared in time. They were destroyed, abandoned, forgotten, and we're in a 150-year period of rediscovery of the Holy Land. And this is sort of at the end of that process. Certainly, it's the last site of the gospel. So for me as a Christian, it's very important to understand where events take place, because sometimes geography shapes how we read the stories. For instance, we read about Jesus hearing that John the Baptist has been killed, and so he withdraws to the area of Bethsaida. And what a lot of times people don't realize is that he withdraws from the area that's under the control of Herod Antipas, who has just murdered his cousin, and withdraws outside of his area, his domain, into the area of Golanitis, which is still under the control of Herod Philip. So it's there are interesting dynamics that help shape our reading of the Gospels when it says that Jesus told his disciples to get in the boat and go to the other side. In English, that's a relative term. But in the Gospel language, the language that we read in the Gospels, that's invariably to the northeast corner, the northeast side of the lake. And it, if you will, the Gospel's perspective is from the west or the northwest side. So it's talking about going over, another term we could use is the Transjordan, the area beyond the Jordan. So it's been good to locate it. And of course, after 16 years of excavation, we have material culture that sheds light on aspects of the gospel story and the historical narrative. We read in Josephus, early rabbinic literature. It's always very helpful for us to sort of set the stage for these events. So for me, it's been to excavate there. One of the things that, I mean, I don't want to spill all the beans for my lecture because then nobody will come. But one of the fascinating things, no one knew when we, first of all, when we started digging, no one thought that there was anything there. Everyone thought I was high on something. And Moti Aviam agreed to excavate. And much to his surprise, he would tell you, if he was here, he'd tell you, he didn't think that there was a Roman city under the ground, that had been covered over, silted over, and completely, no one was aware of it. And so, or at least, you know, there were speculations from the 19th century. But archaeologically, no one was giving any serious thought to it. So to find that, and then surprisingly to find a Byzantine basilica, which was legendary in terms of pilgrimage. We have pilgrims mentioning their presence there at a church built over the house of Peter and Andrew. And to actually get my hands dirty in excavating under the apse, and finding that under the apse is indeed a first century house. That's pretty good. You know, that's special for a New Testament scholar. It doesn't get much better than that. So it's been a rich experience, both the relationships that have been built in this process and then the excavations themselves, finding that. And as we always like to say, archaeology has the last word. You can have theories, you can have ideas, but if you dig and you don't find the evidence to back it up, then there's a problem. So it's been good. I would say today there's very little question that we are excavating New Testament Bethsaida.
That's so fascinating. Tell us more about, you mentioned 16 years at this site. Tell us more about this dig, the dig itself, the history of the dig, how it fits into the digs, the excavations that have happened in the region.
Okay. First of all, we began in 2016. It's 10 years, but, okay. No, it's okay. We started in 2016. The reason it began, there was another, Israeli archaeologist who had suggested an alternate site called Et Tel. And it's a few kilometers away from our site. There was in the archaeological circles, there were very few people asking questions or challenging it. As an historical geographer, for me, it's not just the physical evidence, the artifacts, but it's also the historical record that has to be taken into account. And so already in 2000, I began to present and raise questions about the other site. Two main elements that caused it, in my opinion, to fail. One, it's, and you don't need a PhD for this, it's 3 kilometers from the lakeshore. And I grew up in Oklahoma. And I tell people, you don't build a fishing village 3 kilometers from the lakeshore. It's a long way to pull your boat. So its position did not work. And the other difficulty is that after 20 years of excavation, they had very little from the Roman period. They have magnificent Iron Age, Old Testament period remains. But when they move into the first century, it virtually disappears. Just at the time that Josephus, the Jewish historian, says that it was being transformed into a city, a polis. So there was a disconnect there. I began to speak publicly and then published a paper in 2007 in Near Eastern Archaeology. That the title of it, Etel is not Bethsaida. So I thought, why dance? Just get to the point. And it caused a stir in the archaeological world. And his response to me was, our site is Bethsaida because it's the only one excavated. If you think it's someplace else, go dig. So we did. Former student of mine, Mark Turnage, who actually lives in Springfield, organized the initial survey and the first season of excavation. And I knew once it was organized, I had to get involved. And so I came out, was part of the survey, part of the dig, and we've kept on digging. And every year, the evidence has grown stronger and stronger and stronger. Every year at SBL, the Society of Biblical Literature, I have colleagues who questioned it 10 years ago, have come up to me and said, okay, you've convinced me. So I think the ship has been turned. I honestly don't know anybody who is raising any questions about our site. This summer was even stronger, even more significant. There are things that we haven't published yet that will finish any discussion. That just will, with certainty, if anybody has questions, I can't imagine that they would. But there's no question that we're excavating Bethsaida the Jewish.
We're talking with Dr. Stephen Notley, Dean of Religious Studies at Pillar College, and the Reverend Dr. Stephen Peach, Professor of Practical Theology and Dean of Theological Research and Publication at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. And we'll be back in just a moment to learn more about the Biblical Archaeology Lecture coming up September 29th at Concordia Seminary. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth. Who am I? How has God gifted me? Where is God calling me to serve? Concordia University St. Paul helps students explore the answers to these questions. Through a Christ-centered Lutheran higher education, dedicated faculty, and engaging academic programs, CSP is here to walk alongside you in your educational journey. With more than 100 degree programs from undergraduate to graduate offered in person and online, CSP aims to prepare you for success however God calls you. Visit csp.edu to discover and engage your calling today.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Today we're talking with Dr. Stephen Notley, Dean of Religious Studies at Pillar College, and the Reverend Dr. Stephen Peach, Professor of Practical Theology and Dean of Theological Research and Publication at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. We're talking about the third annual These Stones Will Shout Biblical Archaeology Lecture for September 29th at Concordia Seminary. And we've been learning about biblical archaeology and your work, Dr. Notley. You've shared some of the challenges that you face in New Testament archaeology. Are there more challenges that are unique to a site specifically for New Testament history?
Well, I will speak in terms of what's taking place in Israel. You might be surprised to know that we're the only site right now, New Testament sites being excavated. Almost all archaeology is dealing with Old Testament sites, Iron Age sites, early bronze. This is one of the reasons that we were approached this year by Lipscomb University out of Tennessee, and they were looking to join and be a part of a New Testament archaeology site, and we're it. And so they joined us this summer, and hopefully it will become a long-term relationship there. But there's very little New Testament archaeology taking place. And I mean, we can speculate all the various reasons, but I think one of the things among with Christians is that we tend, when we shift into the New Testament, our thinking becomes more theological ideas, religious ideas, and the concrete elements, the material elements of the story aren't quite as forefront. And, you know, I used to all the time, people would ask, you know, they find out I'm doing a doctorate at Hebrew University, and they would say, well, what aspect of Old Testament are you doing? And I go, I'm a New Testament scholar. I said, and I always have to remind them that Jesus lived there too. And so sometimes people sort of, they forget that aspect. And so there really isn't a lot of, always a lot of attention given to New Testament archaeology, New Testament historical geography. And it's an interesting dynamic. I've been at sessions where they were doing archaeological session. There'd be 20 archaeologists there, and two of us dealt with the Roman period, New Testament period. Everyone else is dealing in the Old Testament. And so I'm a minority. No matter if I show up, I'm automatically going to be a minority there.
What is so important then about New Testament biblical archaeology? What do we learn from the things that you're discovering in the excavations? What do we learn when you're able to uncover things that you've been uncovering over the last 10 years?
I think you learn when you engage the material culture, it has it shapes our understanding of the religious culture, the setting that's there. I mean, it differs from place to place. I would say one of the things that's struck me this summer is how that the population there was Jewish. Now, most people say, of course it was. But even after it became a polis, became a city, a lot of times in scholarship, they will assume that everything gets Hellenized, that they lose their religious orientation. But what we're finding is that even in the layers, the later settlement there, they remained a very distinct religious orientation, observance. Stone vessels that are found are the chalk stone vessels, which are a distinctive marker for Jewish settlement. I would say one of the moving things is when you find a Herodian lamp, a knife-paired lamp, that were only made in Jerusalem pre-70. So when you find one at Bethsaida, that means someone has traveled to Jerusalem and brought it back as a souvenir, a memory of their time in Jerusalem. So when we have Jesus going, moving back and forth to Jerusalem and pilgrimage, the material remains that we're finding reflect that lifestyle, that connection, the centrality of Jerusalem. And again, sort of sets the stage for the story that we read.
Dr. Notley, what are you looking forward to sharing in your upcoming lecture at Concordia Seminary?
I think the main thing I want to do is to, again, not everybody is aware of the developments of this site or the history of this site. The fact that until recently, I would say until recently, its identification had not been embraced or been known. And some of the material remains that are coming out from it, that tell us who's living there, the culture, the religious culture, the work we find every day. We find dozens and dozens of lead fishing weights, which are indicative that this is a fishing industry. So when we hear about Peter, Andrew, and Philip being involved in fishing, that gets reinforced by the findings that we have on site. And so I think what I want to do is to try to present the profile, to paint a picture of what Bethsaida looked like. At least a quarter of Jesus' disciples come from there. So it's not an insignificant site. After Jerusalem, Capernaum, it is the most often mentioned place in the Gospels. And so it has a profound importance. We have Jesus' ministry there. I would argue that the feeding of the 5,000 takes place just outside there. It refers to it as the wilderness of Bethsaida. And so I hope to sort of help people understand a little bit more of the setting for Jesus's presence there, his ministry there, and some of the dynamics of the land, how it shapes our reading of the Gospels.
Dr. Peach, why is this lecture with Dr. Nutley important for the seminary community?
Well, for some of the reasons that Dr. Nutley has already talked about, I think that it deepens our understanding between the material geographical world of the New Testament and what we read in the Gospels. There's an interesting effect that happens when you study literature, and that is that you go into a kind of, not exactly an imagined world, but a world which you have constructed in your mind. You know, when Dr. Nutley was describing those events that take place in the Gospels, I have created in my mind an image of what that countryside is like, what the Sea of Galilee is like. It's very actually powerful to be shocked out of that into understanding what it's actually like. What is there now? And what it underlines is that what the Gospels describe are historical events and historical things that happened in this world. Jesus' feet walked on that soil. These things took place in this place. And I think that there's a kind of salutary, not shock exactly, a salutary discovery there of the actual historic, another dimension of the historical reality of what we read in the Gospels. And the other thing which Dr. Nutley described too is, okay, what does it mean that Jesus went from one side of the sea to the other? What does it mean for him to go trans-Jordan and to withdraw from the territory of Herod Antipas into different territory? It gives us a deeper understanding of Jesus' movement and what that means. And this adds to the depth of biblical insight in the way we interpret those Gospels, and it shows us new things about the reality of Jesus' world and Jesus' life and the life of his and the ongoing unfolding of his ministry, his earthly ministry. So I think there's a tremendous amount of stuff there, and I think that this is very exciting. And the other thing that I'm very keen to find out about, if I can branch out on my own here a little bit to ask a different question, is I'm very interested in the Byzantine basilica that was built on top of the house. And what is the story of that? And how long after do you think Dr. Nutley did that come? And who were the Christians who were there at that time? That next layer of history up.
Do you want me to answer that, or is that
enough to help us know why we need to come to the lecture?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a fascinating story. No one knew the basilica was there. Everyone had overlooked the historical witnesses, and they assumed there was nothing there at all. So and once we found it, that there actually is a very, I speak of a living, there's a living memory. They didn't just decide to build a church there. There's a living memory of where that was located. I've dug through the floor three places in the church. Every time there are Roman period, first century homes there. So it's no accident where it's located. So you'll have to come to Concordia to hear the full story, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story.
Dr. Peach, tell us more about attending, how to attend the upcoming lecture at Concordia Seminary on September 29th.
So on September 29th, you show up at the seminary campus. You come to the Werner Auditorium soon before 7 p.m. The lecture will go between 7 and 8 p.m. We have the pleasure of hosting Dr. Notley for the day here at the seminary and spending some time with him. The public lecture is at 7 p.m. in the Werner Auditorium. So we're hoping that we'll attract all sorts of people. This is a truly fascinating topic and quite unique. We're not going to see we're not going to see much New Testament archaeology float past us, right? At Concordia Seminary or probably anywhere else. So this is unique, very special and very fascinating and wonderful opportunity to make contact with the geographical and material culture of the Gospels as it's been revealed through this biblical archaeology.
Again, the third annual These Stones Will Shout Biblical Archaeology Lecture, September 29th at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Stephen Notley, Dean of Religious Studies at Pillar College, will be presenting for the lecture. Dr. Notley, thank you so much for being our guest on the Coffee Hour today.
Thank you for having me here. I look forward to being in St. Louis.
And the Reverend Dr. Stephen Peach, Professor of Practical Theology and Dean of Theological Research and Publication at Concordia Seminary. Thank you so much for joining us today. You've been listening to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour is a production of KFUO. This program and our station are dependent on listeners just like you. To support KFUO Radio, our podcast, and all the other programming, please make your gift or pledge today at kfuo.org/give and help us continue sharing the good news of Christ for you anytime, anywhere. kfuo.org/give.